Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Hope you're having a great Tuesday. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is on the air on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett, sitting courtside at Mishawaka High School, the Cave Gymnasium, where tonight we have Mishawaka Cave in basketball on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. It will be 9-7 Mishawaka, taking on the New Prairie Cougars, who are 7-8 on the season. It's an NIC matchup. And pregame should start right around 7:20 or so, and hopefully we'll get an opening tip of the varsity game right around 7:30. Again, Mishawaka Cavemen basketball tonight on Z94.3 FM as the Cavemen take on New Prairie. The game moves to that station because we have Fighting Irish basketball tonight on 96.1 FM WSBT. It is Notre Dame taking on the Boston College Eagles in an Atlantic Coast Conference matchup. Notre Dame looking to halt their 7-game losing streak. Boston College, better than the last couple of years, stumbled a bit lately. Notre Dame has owned the series, winning 8 consecutive games against the gentleman from Chestnut Hill. So Irish basketball tonight on WSBT Radio. The opening tip will be at 8 o'clock. Jack Nolan will start the coverage with the pregame show at 7:40 here on WSBT Radio. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. He's back in our WSBT studios. And we're going to focus in the opening hour of the program mainly on what is going to be a very interesting national signing day for the Irish football team. Of course, they signed 21 players in December during the first signing period. And now the second signing period, there could be a surge of talent coming into the Irish program. Eric will discuss that coming up in just a matter of moments. Also, Eric started a series in the South Bend Tribune and also on IndyInsider.com, the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era. And so Eric did a very interesting piece. It's not all about star ratings. Geographical significance was a part of the equation. Impact on the program, perception, the timing, how the player developed, team success, all a part of the big picture. And I thought for sure his number one would be a certain player, and I was wrong. My choice ended up being number 6. And when I heard his explanation, I totally understood why my guy was number 6. So we'll talk about 16 through 9 today, and then either tomorrow or Thursday, we will have 8 through 1. We'll have National Signing Day coverage tomorrow on Sports Beat. It will include a one-on-one with Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly. We'll bring you that interview, and we are scheduled to talk to all the assistant coaches, including the newest members of the staff. Eric and I will be going one-on-one with those assistant coaches, so we probably won't get all the interviews done tomorrow during our National Signing Day coverage, but we'll get to all of them by the end of the week. So a lot of signing day coverage tomorrow here on WSBT Radio. My 5 question of the day in about 40 minutes, combining last year's class and this year's class, what will be the strength of the group? Next hour on the program, Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune will fill in for Sean Sires, and he will be courtside at Purcell Pavilion. We'll talk all things Notre Dame basketball as they get set to take on Boston College. The state of the ACC will be in our conversation, and we will have rapid fire. One of the questions, we'll tease it: who scores more points for the Irish the rest of the season, Matt Farrell or TJ Gibbs? We'll discuss that coming up here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. I'm at Mishawaka High School because I'm going to fill in for Sean with the play-by-play tonight here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Vince Daddario will be the analyst, as always, for Mishawaka Cayman basketball on WSBT Radio. NFL Combine news today. It was announced that five members of the Fighting Irish football team will take part in the combine down in Indianapolis later on this month. And the five players invited to participate: offensive guard Quentin Nelson, offensive tackle Mike McGlinchey, tight end Durham Smythe, running back Josh Adams, and wide receiver Equanimeous St. Brown. You wonder how much Quentin Nelson is going to do at the combine, considered at the very least a top 15 pick. Some have him as high as number 3. Todd McShay had him outside the top 10 from ESPN and Scouts Inc. Still early on in the mock draft process, but Quentin being a high first-round pick, you wonder how much he'll actually do at the combine. He really doesn't have a whole lot to prove. I think his game film tells a lot of story about who he is. Also, Mike McGlinchey could fall into that same category, possible first-round pick out of Notre Dame. And then the other three, you would think they're going to be doing most of the activities. Tight end Durham Smythe impressed at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama, including catching a touchdown pass in the Senior Bowl game. All-around tight end, not going to be a guy you're going to split outside like some of those athletic tight ends in the National Football League, but a great inline blocker. I think he's going to be a very solid number two type tight end in the National Football League. Running back Josh Adams, the interviews I think are going to be very important for him after missing a lot of snaps this year and a huge decrease in productivity over the second half of the year. And Equanimeous St. Brown probably will be doing most of the activities, I would assume, as well. A very quiet junior season. Many of the reasons have to do with the quarterbacks unable to get Equanimeous the football. But Equanimeous has to learn also to fight for the football in those one-on-one battles like we saw Miles Boykin do at the end of the Citrus Bowl. I think the most interesting storyline possibly out of the NFL Combine announcement is linebacker Niles Morgan was not invited to the combine. Greer Martini was not either, and that's probably not a surprise. Niles might have been on the list of possibilities, but he did not get invited. So we'll bring Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune into the conversation. He's back in our WSBT studios. I kind of threw a lot of things out there with that combine conversation. Anything you'd like to add, agree with, disagree with?
Well, I think Niles should have gotten an invite. I think he was a productive enough player. Notre Dame's leading tackler and leader in sacks in 2016, the second leading tackler in 2017. That one is a head scratcher to me a bit. Now, he still can participate in Notre Dame's Pro Day, which is going to be March 22nd on the Notre Dame campus. But Darren, since 2000, only two Notre Dame players that didn't get invited to the combine got drafted, and both those guys were in the same draft. Derek Landry, a fifth rounder in 2007, and Mike Richardson, a cornerback, sixth rounder in 2007.
I know what you said there about Niles Morgan, his productivity in 2016, but the productivity dipped this year. There weren't many Niles Morgan plays that stand out in your mind after you look back at the 12 games this year, and I still think he might have been injured. I felt like his shoulder might have been compromised. Even in the BC game, I remember him just kind of moving that arm and shoulder around, and it just felt like that he just wasn't fully healthy throughout the year. But Eric, it is hard to pick out many impact wild plays from Niles Morgan this year, and that possibly led to him being picked over for a spot in the combine. It was just kind of a year in which he didn't play poorly, but it wasn't like he was a difference maker for that Irish defense that got a whole lot better this year.
Well, you know, what Niles has to do is, if the shoulder was compromised, he needs to heal up and be ready for that March 22nd Pro Day and then really put up some great numbers and some great drills. I think he'll interview well with the teams. And the fact that McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson, I don't know how much they would do at the Pro Day, but the fact that they're in the mix for the draft and their first rounders should draw more scouts and coaches and personnel types to Notre Dame than if those guys weren't on the team this year and your top pro prospect was Josh Adams.
Makes a lot of sense. So NFL Combine, again, Nelson, McGlinchey, Smythe, Adams, and St. Brown received invitations from the National Football League. Eric, tomorrow, National Signing Day, the February installment. The Irish were quite busy in December during the first ever early signing period, and we already have seven early enrollees on campus. Cornerback Houston Griffith, inside linebackers Jack Lamb and Matthew Bauer, tight end George Takis, wide receiver Micah Jones, outside linebacker Ovi Ogahofu. I'll get it right eventually when he gets in an Irish helmet officially, and running back Jameer Smith. Of those seven guys, who do you believe, Eric, will benefit the most from being already on campus and will be able to participate in spring practice?
I would pick out three of them. Obviously, Jameer Smith, he's your default number three running back right now, and for him to go through a spring practice and be able to work on route running and blitz pickup in addition to learning the running back plays is a huge advantage, because we saw Notre Dame get down to its third and fourth backs quite a bit this past season. I would say Houston Griffith as a corner or a safety could really make some inroads beyond special teams in terms of trying to climb the depth chart and set the stage for early in his career. And I think that Clark Lee, the new defensive coordinator and second-year linebackers coach, I think he's open to a young linebacker, you know, moving into the two deeps. And I think Lamb is probably the guy that's a little bit more advanced than Bauer is at this point. I think he has the higher ceiling, so I would think Lamb would be a guy that could take advantage of this early start.
14 other players signed national letters of intent in December. They'll be in this summer, and that includes quarterback Phil Jurkovec. So, Eric, that sets the stage for what could happen tomorrow in the February edition of National Signing Day for Brian Kelly and the Fighting Irish. Let me start with Luke Jones, the offensive tackle. How confident are you that he will sign with the Fighting Irish tomorrow?
Really confident. You know, he was, I think, the Harry Hiestand decision, Notre Dame's offensive line coach's decision to leave Notre Dame to go to the Chicago Bears, I think jolted him a little bit, but he was curious to see who the next offensive line coach was. Brian Kelly and Jeff Quinn, the new line coach, went down to Arkansas, to Little Rock, to meet with him. He seemed to have a great first impression of Jeff Quinn. And so I would be shocked if there was anything but a signature early in the morning from Luke Jones.
So Jones is an offensive lineman that should join the class. Do you have the feeling that he may not be the only offensive lineman that signs tomorrow with Notre Dame?
Well, there were two others in play. There was a four-star, Jarrett Patterson from Mission Viejo, California, which is Max Redfield's old high school. And there was Nicholas Petit Frere from Tampa, Florida. And it seems like right now, for those people that do all the, that they do the crystal balls and the tarot cards and the Ouija boards, they're saying for Petit Ferrer probably won't end up in Indy's class, and that Patterson probably will. So if you could take a split of those two, I think it would have been great to get both of them, but if you could take one of them, I think that's a tremendous addition to Notre Dame's class.
Eric, on the program yesterday, we teased that this could be a very, very productive day tomorrow when the Irish sign some more players on National Signing Day. Why do you believe this could be a huge get day for the Irish? And maybe I should ask, do you still feel the same way you did yesterday?
I do. I think minimally they'll get five kids, and I think probably they will get six, which would take them to 27. And I'm sure there are listeners that kind of wonder and say, wait, didn't the NCAA put a hard cap on 25 this year? They did, with one loophole. They closed all the other loopholes. There's no more blue shirts, there's no more gray shirts, which is not something Notre Dame participated in, but a lot of other schools did. But if you go over 25, you can count kids against your previous class if you have early enrollees. The only trick there is you can't be at your limit of 25 the previous class. Notre Dame only signed 21 in the previous class, So theoretically, they could go up to 29 with this class, and it looks like they're going to hit 27, I believe. So they will go two over the 25 limit legally.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on 96.1 FM WSBT, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. Eric back at our studios. I'm Darren out at Mishawaka High School. Cayman basketball on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, tonight at 7:30. It's Mishawaka versus New Prairie. So, Eric, you mentioned five or six players could sign with the Irish. We talked about two offensive linemen. Are there a couple of other names that Irish fans need to know about going into tomorrow?
Well, I would say Lawrence Keys, the wide receiver out of New Orleans, really fast kid. I think why he's maybe not rated a little bit higher than what he is on some of the services, because his offers were tremendous. He was a national recruit. He's 5'11", 160, but he absolutely is a burner. And so that's a good get for Notre Dame. Saborius Flemister is a kid that's committed to Georgia Tech currently. He's a running back. He's a young man that had a pretty strong senior year, bumped from a two-star to a three-star recently. Tom Lemming, CBS sports analyst, really likes him. So I think that's a guy that we can count on being in the class. Derek Eason is a defensive end, kind of a strong side defensive end that's in NC State's class. Notre Dame is expected to flip him, and I'm forgetting somebody, but I will come back to that in a second, because there's one more player that I'm leaving out that I'm spacing on. Oh, DJ Brown, who is was a Virginia commit, and Notre Dame is likely to end up with him. He's a cornerback. And they've been hot and cold with him as they've looked at other players. But those four that we just talked about, plus Luke Jones, I think those you can bank on. And then Jarrett Patterson, I think, is a probable add as well.
Okay, so there's a little bit of information leading into National Signing Day, the February edition tomorrow. And again, Eric and I will be over at Notre Dame tomorrow morning, and we are scheduled to have the chance to talk to Notre Dame assistant coaches. And Eric and I will go one-on-one with Brian Kelly tomorrow. Also, if you would like to listen to Brian Kelly's National Signing Day press conference, we'll have it for you live tomorrow right around noon here on 96.1 FM WSBT. So we'll have BK's presser live at noon, and then we'll have our one-on-one with BK tomorrow night during the 5 o'clock hour on Sports Beat. And then over the next couple of days, we will mix in assistant coaches' interviews as well. So a busy day tomorrow over at the Goop. When we come back, we will continue to focus on Notre Dame football recruiting, but with a twist this time. Eric is in the midst of running articles in the South Bend Tribune talking about the top recruits in the Brian Kelly era. So today we're going to focus on 16 through 9. Who are the most important recruits that have signed with the Irish since Brian Kelly has been Notre Dame's head coach? We'll tell you coming up next. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Abby, thank you for the forecast update. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 FM WSBT. Eric Hansen from our WSBT studios, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett from Mishawaka High School. I'll be calling the Cayman New Prairie boys basketball game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, tonight right around 7:30. We have Notre Dame basketball on WSBT radio tonight, 7:40 pregame. Jack Nolan has the play-by-play at 8 o'clock as the Fighting Irish take on the Boston College Eagles at Purcell Pavilion. We'll talk Irish basketball next hour when Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune will join me courtside live from Purcell Pavilion. So with all the focus on National Signing Day tomorrow in college football, Eric has put together a very interesting list, the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era. And he put together the list, not basing it just on star ratings and some of the criteria, geographical significance, impact on program perception, need, timing, how the player developed, and team success are all part of the big picture. So we're going to talk about 16 through 9 today. Then either tomorrow or Thursday, probably Thursday with National Signing Day tomorrow, we'll get to 8 through 1. And as I teased earlier, my choice for number 1 was number 6 on the list. So, Eric, we'll start with your 16 through 9. And there's a lot of big names in this part of your list of the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era. And the first player we're going to talk about, we've actually mentioned in the opening segment of the program, but his snub from the NFL Combine, and that's linebacker Niles Morgan. He came in at number 16. Why was it important to have Niles Morgan on this list?
Well, at the end of Bob Diaco's time at Notre Dame and the beginning of Van Gorder's, there was not a real great direction in terms of defensive recruiting. Bob Diaco left in early December, and Brian Van Gorder came in January and wasn't a ball of fire ever in recruiting. And so, consequently, of the 13 defensive signees, you had 10 3-stars in that class. And Niles was not one of them. He was a really nationally pursued linebacker by all the big programs, and he did not have Notre Dame initially in his top 5 finalists. They were able to get him, and it was really important because they were really low on inventory at linebacker, and they were definitely low on star power. And Niles gave them a chance at both, and I think he lived up to that.
This next guy, we haven't had a chance to see in an Irish uniform yet, but he made your list, Eric, and it's safety Derek Allen. And he is a young man that comes with a lot of high expectations in the class of 2018. He's not an early enrollee, so we will not see him until this summer or in fall practice. So Derek Allen is a guy that is getting a lot of star treatment on those lists. So I know not everything is about the stars on your list. So why is Derek Allen on this list, considering he hasn't played a game for the Irish yet?
Yeah, a couple of things here, Darren. One is geography. He's kind of opened up Georgia again for Notre Dame, and that's an important state for Notre Dame. KJ, the kid that just recently signed or verbally committed to Notre Dame, he is a friend of Derek Allen's, KJ Wallace. And so that's, again, the geographical element is a big part of it. Another thing is perception. Here's this stud recruit, top 50 type recruit, that picks Notre Dame in the spring of 2016 before they go through the 4-8 season. Steadfastly stays with Notre Dame, keeps other players in the class from jumping ship when things went wrong. And again, he was in it a long time, so he went through the whole 2017 season. And again, people were trying to pull him out of the class. All 4 of this year's playoff teams offered him, as well as all kinds of other really good programs across the country. So again, the perception that one of the top defensive players in the country from one of the difficult states to pull talent out of ended up, I think, really lending a very valuable perception of Brian Kelly to other recruits.
We're talking about Eric's article on the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era at Notre Dame, going through 16 through 9 today. Number 14 is wide receiver Will Fuller. And Eric, he was a guy that was not initially going to come to the University of Notre Dame, but they were able to flip him from Penn State, if I remember correctly.
Right. He was a 3-star top 250 guy for most of his recruitment. And Notre Dame really liked him early, and they were able to get him from Penn State. Very thin kid, played in Philadelphia, not a hotbed for recruiting, especially Notre Dame recruiting, although there's 2 guys from Philly on this list. But at the end, he surged in the All-Star games. And what I think this recruitment showed was a couple things. One is he showed that the staff was very good at evaluating talent, that they were high on Will Fuller long before a lot of other schools and recruiting analysts were. The power to pull somebody out of another class. And then he was very important in terms of the 2015 season, when Notre Dame really could have fallen apart in that season because of all the injuries. He was a key player why they didn't, both as a, from a leadership standpoint and running past cornerbacks and catching touchdown passes.
Next on your list at number 13, a guy that ended up being a high first-round pick a couple of years ago, the Baltimore Ravens. That's offensive tackle Ronnie Stanley.
Ronnie was not the jewel of that class, supposedly, but he turned out to be. It was the smallest class. Brian Kelly had 17 players, the lowest-rated class, 20th. And he was the number 176 player overall. What I think Ronnie showed was that player development piece. Mm-hmm. And because Ronnie went from being the 176 player coming out of high school to the number 6 player coming out of college. He also hung around when Ed Warner left to go to Ohio State. Taylor Decker, who also was a first-round draft choice in the same draft, bolted for Ohio State. But Ronnie stuck in that class. And it's also significant that even though Brian Kelly had put a few Notre Dame players into the NFL draft, Ronnie Stanley was the first one that Brian Kelly and not Charlie Weiss had recruited.
Going through the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era, in the opinion of the South Bend Tribune's Eric Hansen, so far 16 through 13, Niles Morgan, Derek Allen, Will Fuller, Ronnie Stanley, and number 12, defensive end Dalen Hayes. Now, I know he was a five-star guy, but what makes Dalen Hayes that important that he comes in at number 12?
Right, and I think, Darren, his last couple years at Notre Dame are going to dictate whether he moves up this list or slides out of it. But he wasn't just a five-star. He was at a position of need pass rusher. He was poached out of USC's recruiting class, which I'm sure is a big perception thing for Notre Dame fans. And he was also pulled out of Jim Harbaugh's backyard. He went to a high school in Ann Arbor, at Ann Arbor Skyline, his senior year. You know, he only played a handful of games in high school because of injuries and a custody battle. You know, he's a guy that seems to have the work ethic, the intelligence, the athletic ability to turn into that five-star production. I think we'll start to see that this year. But we did see a jump in production last year. But very important from a perception standpoint, and I think the production's going to catch up with that.
Okay, so Dalen Hayes, number 12 on the list. Three more players to get to on today's list. And coming in at number 11, one of our favorite people, offensive tackle Mike McGlinchey out of the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think people look at Nelson and McGlinchey together and kind of think, well, these guys must have both been five stars. But Mike McGlinchey wasn't a top 250 player. And Notre Dame signed five offensive linemen in the 2013 class. And he was rated as the fourth best of those five behind Steve Elmer, John Montelis, and Hunter Bivin. And it kind of showed Harry Hiestand's eye for that overlooked talent and the ability to develop them. I also think another reason why he belongs on this list was his decision to come back for his fifth year. And he had a first-round grade last year, Darren, from the NFL Draft Advisory Board. His decision to come back was a big piece in Notre Dame, not just on the field, but in the locker room, turning around from a 4-8 team to a 10-3 squad that finished 11th in the AP poll.
Okay, next up on our list of the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era, in the opinion of Eric Hansen, and at number 10, a guy who blossomed this year after, I guess, hit and misses over his first 2 years at Notre Dame, and a big comeback to the program. Could have left early. He's back, and that's defensive lineman Jerry Tillery.
You know, he was the very first commitment of the 2015 class, and it's a class that's had a lot of attrition. There's 9 actual or impending transfers so far from that class. He ended a big recruiting drought in the state of Louisiana, which has a ton of talent. The last player to come from Louisiana before Tillery in 2015 was Albert Pori, a defensive back in 1999. So he kind of got those lines of Louisiana open again. The other thing, Darren, is he's at a position where Notre Dame has really been short on quality numbers. You know, once Lewis, you had Ian Williams and then Lewis Nix, And then, really, who has been, you know, you've kind of had Jerron Jones kind of fall into the nose guard, but he was injured and kind of inconsistent. I mean, if Jerry Tillery doesn't develop, if he doesn't unselfishly change from being the lead offensive tackle prospect to playing defense Notre Dame, I'm not sure where their defense would have been last year and this next year. He gave this team, this defense, a chance to be good. He gives next year's defense a chance to be really good and maybe great.
And our final player today, as we talk about the top recruits of the Brian Kelly era, Eric, you put a guy that didn't stay around South Bend very long in at number 9, and that is defensive end Aaron Lynch. For a guy that left so quickly, why did you need him on the list?
It was the kind of guy that Notre Dame typically lost in a recruiting battle. He was a high 4-star guy. He was from the state of Florida. He had a potential as an elite pass rusher, and Notre Dame hadn't had that. Charlie Weiss wasn't able to get 4- and 5-star defensive linemen. He'd never recruited a 5-star defensive lineman, really struggled to get the high 4-stars. So he had everything that Notre Dame hadn't been getting. And I think because Aaron Lynch, and it was a soap opera, I mean, he decommitted, he committed to Florida State, he recommitted. But I think he's a reason that Stephon Tuitt and Ishaq Williams also ended up in the class. And that's why I think Aaron Lynch is significant here. Only was here 1 year, freshman All-American, but he definitely set the stage for something special. I don't think Tuitt ends up in this class if Lynch isn't in it.
Interesting. All right, so that is 16 through 9, and that is Eric's list of the top recruits in the Brian Kelly era. 16 through 9 is linebacker Niles Morgan, safety Derek Allen, wide receiver Will Fuller, offensive tackle Ronnie Stanley, defensive end Dalen Hayes, and then offensive tackle Mike McGlinchey, defensive lineman Jerry Tillery, and defensive end Aaron Lynch. Again, my number one ended up number 6 on Eric's list, so you have a chance to go to the South Bend Tribune or IndyInsider.com to review all of his choices. It's a very interesting look at what the Brian Kelly era has been like in recruiting, and it looks like this is going to be a stellar 2018 class with 21 signed already, and as Eric mentioned in our opening segment, there could be 5 or 6 more signing with the Fighting Irish tomorrow. And in our My 5 question of the day, we'll combine the 17 and 18 Notre Dame football recruiting classes and ask Eric what he believes the strength when you put those two groups together is. So we'll get to that coming up in just a few moments here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Well, the Fighting Irish basketball team in action tonight. They'll take on the Boston College Eagles at Purcell Pavilion. It's an 8 o'clock tip tonight. The game on WSBT radio with pregame at 7:40. From what I understand, tickets are available for tonight's game. And Mike Bray's squad looking to halt the 7-game losing streak. They started the ACC 3-0. Of course, during that 3-0 stretch, they lost Bonzi Colson pretty much for the rest of the regular season with a foot injury. Now, he had an X-ray or an MRI today. I can't remember which it is. I apologize. Or that was actually yesterday, and we have not heard from Mike Bray since, because if everything was okay on the pictures, he would get the boot off and you would be taking steps forward in getting him on the floor. But again, it's very unlikely he would be back before the regular season comes to a close. You get him back for Brooklyn, the ACC tournament, that probably is considered a win, excuse me, at this particular moment. And of course, also during that 3-0 stretch, Matt Farrell went down with an injury. Of course, he returned to the Irish lineup at NC State on Saturday, a losing effort as the Irish fell to the Wolfpack 76-58. So no DJ Harvey, as we found out in yesterday's teleconference with head coach Mike Bray. They actually went and got a second opinion on DJ Harvey's bone bruise on his knee. They didn't like the way maybe things were progressing, or they just really wanted a second opinion. And they went over there and they were able to get the Chicago Bulls doctors, and they were able to take a look at the pictures, and we have not heard the result of that either. So maybe we'll get updates on Colson and also Harvey in the post game tonight when Mike Bray meets the media following this matchup against Boston College. And Eric, just from your standpoint, as you enter this game, having watched Notre Dame recently, Saturday the exception, they had been very competitive in pretty much all the games since Bonzi Colson went down with an injury. They were not competitive against NC State. It was a payback game, and the Wolfpack got off to a 9-0 start. Irish were never able to catch up, and let's face it, they lost by 18. They were really down by 30 when they made a late 11-1 run just to make things a little more respectable. As you enter this basketball game, what do you feel like could be the difference for Notre Dame tonight in helping them at least to pick up a victory? It's not going to solve all the problems. You can't make up for a 3-7 record in one game. You got to just pick off games at a time. So what do you feel like they can do tonight that might put them over the top and back in the win column?
Darren, do we know what Mooney's status is for tonight?
You know, we have not heard officially. I would bet that there is an awfully good chance that we're going to see John Mooney tonight. Again, nothing official. We can ask Tom Noy when he joins the program at the start of the 6 o'clock hour to see if Mooney is out on the floor and what he's doing before the game. So, Eric, if I had to guess, I would expect in some fashion he would be a part of this game. How much? It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think Mooney would be a big key to them being more competitive, if not, you know, winning a game. But also I think Matt Farrell kind of settling into who Matt Farrell is, being smart with the ball, having a better shooting percentage, not trying to put too much on his shoulders, because there are other players there. I realize that they're hurting for scoring, but, you know, 5 turnovers is not Matt Farrell basketball, and I think he knows that. So I'm really curious to see how Matt Farrell plays in this game. And if Rex can somehow find his shooting touch, and I'm talking about Rex Pfluger, that would certainly help things as well, because when he can't shoot from the outside, teams are going to let him take his shot, and they're going to sag off and play on other guys, help out on other players.
Eric, the Irish are playing tonight, which is a Tuesday, and you do not have to play again until Saturday. You have no travel. It's back-to-back home games. So I think we saw in the second half, Eric, against NC State, Mike Bray tighten up the rotation. And I know it's been hard to tighten the rotation because he's been trying everything. He's been trying to find any combination that can supply him with more offense. And it feels like every time he tries something, and I think Tom Noy talked about this as well, that it just seems like they get farther away from finding their offense. So it seemed like in the second half against NC State, he cut down the rotation a little bit. And I think with some time off in between games and you don't have to worry about travel, this would be a good night, I think, to shorten the bench. And if you don't get guys in foul trouble, you get into a good rhythm. I like shortening the bench a little bit. I know fans forever around here have begged Mike Bray to play 8 or 9 guys, and they've gotten their wish the last couple of years. But, Eric, I just feel like for the flow of the offense and just for the quality of play, I think you just can't rely on what would be your 10th and 11th guys on the roster at the start of the year to play important minutes in this game. I think you got to go with your main guys, and you get what you get out of them.
Yeah, I would.
Gibbs has got to play 37, 38 minutes. If Farrell is able to, you get as much as you can out of him. Now, Gebbins not going to be able to play probably 30, 32 minutes, so you're going to have to use some of the bigs. Maybe Gebbins can, but you're going to have to probably use those a little bit. You got to play Pfluger because he can rebound. He's good defensively, so even though the shots aren't falling, I still feel like you got to keep him on the floor. But I just wonder if it's time to weed out maybe one guy or two guys in order to try to find a little more flow and rhythm on the offensive end.
I don't think that's a bad idea, especially since Jerry, our producer, brought his phone over to me and let me see a tweet from Allison Hayes that John Mooney will return for Notre Dame tonight. So if John Mooney is moving around well, I like that shorter bench concept.
I do, too. I think that's a really, really good idea. And BC inside, I don't think they're absolutely going to frighten you. We'll get to Tom Noy's opinion on that coming up in just a little bit. So maybe when Gebbins has to sit, can Mooney be a guy that can at least hold his own defensively down low against a BC big. I don't know if I totally trust myself on that, but I'm just trying to figure out a way to shorten the bench a little bit just so they can maybe find a little flow. And I just think, Eric, there's a point where if you keep going too deep, you just really don't have much of a chance offensively. There was a couple of combinations Saturday. You watch and you wondered where in the world are the points going to come from, because you got a lot of players that can help defensively and rebound up front, but offensively they're still very, very challenged outside of Gebbin. 11 minutes in front of the top of the hour. My five question of the day coming up next. The Sports Beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My Five Question of the Day, combining the 2017 and 2018 Notre Dame football recruiting classes. What does Eric believe will be the strengths of this group? We'll begin with number five.
Well, he's only in one of the two classes, but it's the next quarterback phenom, and that's Phil Jurkovec. Avery Davis was in the last class, Phil Jurkovec in the 2018 class, and I think he's the quarterback everybody's kind of excited about how things are going to play out with him in the future.
Number four.
Really about building depth at all positions, Darren. What happened early in the Brian Kelly era is that they would be deep at some positions, not at others. They'd have an injury or a transfer, and it would really kind of wreck a season or put Notre Dame in a really compromising position. I think they've put themselves in a position where if they swing on miss on somebody or they have some injuries, they're not such a fragile team. They can move on with their depth.
We're going through the strengths of the 17 and 18 Notre Dame football recruiting classes, and here's number three.
Reestablishment of tight end U. In 2017, you had Komet and Wright. In 2018, you have Takis and Tremble. I think that's a pretty good collection of talent at tight end in two classes.
Number two.
Number two is the concept that these kids were sold on Brian Kelly as the future of Notre Dame. I know there's a lot of folks in the fan base that just drove off the road, but, you know, they're not recruits. It's what the recruits are seeing, and they bought into the Brian Kelly. With all the changes around him, still Brian Kelly is the focal point of this program.
And finally, what you believe is the strength when you combine the 17 and 18 Notre Dame football recruiting classes.
And I think Mike Elko, who was the one-and-done defensive coordinator, gets a lot of credit here, but it's the rise of the Notre Dame defense. Notre Dame next season should have its best defense since 2012. I don't know that they're at that level, but I think they have a chance to coax Notre Dame into the playoff discussion, deep into the playoff season.
There you go. Today's My Five Question of the Day from Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tyler James is a busy boy. He will have a preview of tomorrow's signing day. He will have signing day superlatives, all the bios of the players that have signed letters of intent. We'll have Boston College at Notre Dame men's hoops, Washington Riley's boys hoops, and much, much more.
Eric, thank you. I will see you tomorrow morning at the Goog.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, Tom Noy will co-host the program, and he is live at Purcell Pavilion. We'll talk Fighting Irish basketball coming up next. It is the top of the hour, and here comes a CBS Sports update from 96.1 FM WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Tom Noy and Darren Pritchett.
Welcome back to hour number two of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. on 96.1 FM WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett at Mishawaka High School, where tonight the Cavemen will take on New Prairie in boys basketball action. You can hear that game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. I'm going to fill in for Sean Sires and have the play-by-play of this NIC matchup. Tom Noy is at Purcell Pavilion on the campus of the University of Notre Dame, where the Irishmen's basketball team will take on Boston College in ACC play. You can hear that game on WSBT Radio, the opening tip at 8 o'clock. And pregame coverage will get underway at 7:40 on 96.1 FM WSBT. And we welcome Tom to the program as he is courtside at Purcell Pavilion. Thomas, how are you?
I am doing outstanding, Darren. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Let me start with just a quick update on, I'm sure there's not a whole lot going on the court right now.
There is, actually.
Players. Oh, there is a little bit. Okay.
So you want to know what's going on the court right now? I am watching one, Bonzi Colson,
really?
Shooting around at one of the baskets. Complete with walking boot. He still has the walking boot on.
Okay, Tom, so I know during Monday's teleconference, Mike Bray mentioned that there were going to be some pictures taken of Bonzi Colson's foot, and if all went well, the boot would be off. So is this a bad sign?
No. Actually, it's kind of a revised. Mike Bray got a little ahead of himself, I think, as far as what it meant. He got the x-ray yesterday, his first x-ray since he had the surgery on the foot. Going back almost a month now, the x-ray came back absolutely clean. There are no problems. They're going to keep him in the boot, which I think was always the original plan. He will be in the boot for still another week. A week from tomorrow, next Wednesday, he will get another x-ray on the foot. And if that one comes back clean, then that's when the boot goes off. And he may be able to do a little bit more than what he's doing currently as far as shooting around. Maybe a little light running, a little light jogging. But for all we know and for every indication is Bonzi Colson is still on track to, if everything goes well the rest of this month, to still return possibly for the season finale, the home finale against Pittsburgh at the end of the month. Maybe play a little bit against Pittsburgh. Maybe play a little bit more that last weekend at Virginia. And then, if all that goes well, he'll be turned loose and full go for the ACC tournament in Brooklyn.
Okay, let's talk about John Mooney for a second. He tweaked his ankle toward the end of practice on Thursday, which limited him to just 8 minutes in Raleigh against North Carolina State. Tom, do you have a gut feeling how much Mooney will be able to contribute to the Fighting Irish tonight?
He's listed as a guy that will be able to go. Now, will he start? I don't know. I think maybe this would be, and I've lost track. I've got to go back and look at it again. This might be the eighth different lineup since Bonzi Colson went down with his injury after the first ACC game. So it would be the eighth game, 8 of 10, that they start differently without Bonzi Colson. I don't know if John Mooney's going to start. I've heard they may go with Austin Torres, given what Austin Torres was able to give them the other day in Raleigh. So they may switch it up again tonight. But John Mooney is available. DJ Harvey is not available. And obviously Bonzi Colson is not available. So that is the state of the medical Irish as we sit here a couple hours before game time.
Well, let me just add one more question to this whole medical conversation. I think it was you or somebody in the teleconference asked about DJ Harvey, a bone bruise on the knee, and they actually got a second opinion from Chicago Bulls doctors. Do you have more concern about DJ Harvey and how quickly he can get back?
Yes. DJ Harvey, they originally thought if everything went really, really well, recovering from the bone bruise to the left knee that he suffered late in the first half of the January 16th game against Louisville, if everything went really well, Mike Bray was hoping to have had him on Saturday down in Raleigh against North Carolina State. He was not able to get that knee into a spot where it was good. Mike Bray said even riding the stationary bike caused him some discomfort. Mike Bray's quote on the teleconference yesterday said that was discouraging. They went, Skip Meyer, DJ Harvey went over to Chicago, met with the Chicago Bulls team doctors to kind of get a second opinion on where they stand with that. And DJ Harvey's not going to be available Tuesday. I'd be surprised, talking with some people, if he plays Saturday against Florida State. I would even be surprised if he plays Monday against North Carolina or the following Saturday against Boston College. There's some indication, Darren, that DJ Harvey could be on the same timetable back as Bonzi Colson. So it might be a while with DJ Harvey, which is not good news.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So Mike will go with the guys he's got tonight. And, Tom, they'll take on a Boston College team that is improved over the last couple of years. They seem to play a little better at home than they do on the road. They've had some, they beat Duke in Chestnut Hill earlier this year among their interesting victories. So, Tom, how much of a threat is Boston College to Notre Dame considering the state of where the Irish are right now?
Huge. Huge threat. You look at this game, and this is a game where every year that Notre Dame's been in the ACC, you look at it and say guaranteed win. Either in South Bend or in Chestnut Hill, they're going to beat Boston College. They're 8-0 lifetime as ACC colleagues against Boston College. This might be a game that streak will be in jeopardy because Boston College improving. Like you said, they're better at home. Since Notre Dame's first year in the ACC, Boston College is a combined 5-35 on the road. They went 2 years without even winning a road game. I think their last road win was March 2nd of 2015, I want to say, at Virginia Tech. So they've been in a lot of road games this year. At Louisville, they played that tough. They came back from 18 down to cut it to a 2-point game with like 3 minutes to play. So this is not your typical Boston College team, because what the Irish are going to struggle with tonight, perimeter defense. Mm-hmm. Boston College is really, really good on the perimeter with Jerome Robinson, the leading scorer in the ACC, with Kai Bowman, who signed originally to play football at North Carolina before saying, you know what, I'm going to give this basketball thing a shot. And Jordan Chatman, who's a transfer student. That gives this Boston College team three really good guards. And if TJ Gibbs, Rex Pfluger, and Matt Farrell aren't careful, they'll be the three best guards on the floor tonight.
Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune co-hosting the 6 o'clock hour sports beat brought to you by Budweiser. He's live at Purcell Pavilion, courtside, getting set to cover the Irish and the Eagles for the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. I'm Darren Pritchett at Mishawaka High School, Caveman and New Prairie, on our sister station, Z94.3 FM tonight at 7:30. Tom, I would like to get your impressions on what you saw from Matt Farrell Saturday when you were courtside in Raleigh, his first game back from his second go since the ankle injury. Got better in the second half. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing, and I know this is a very small sample size, did you see enough from Saturday to make you believe that we're going to see at least a close proximity to the old Matt Farrell tonight?
Not only did I see it, Darren, but I think Mike Bray saw enough of it in the second half to be very encouraged. They were very discouraged, having lost by 18 points in a game that they were at one point down by 30. But the way that Matt Farrell played in the second half, he got into more of a flow, got back into more of his attacking, aggressive self, to where maybe the first half he comes in and he's like, okay, I'm gonna play off the ball a little bit. I'm gonna let TJ Gibbs handle. I'm gonna be more of a spot up shooter. That didn't go, I think, as well as everybody had hoped, because they fell into such a big hole so early that Matt Farrell went back to being the main handler. And in the second half, you kind of saw the old Matt Farrell before he sprained his ankle way back on January 3rd against North Carolina State. He was able to make some things happen. I know he had 5 turnovers. He wasn't happy about that, but that was more of he was trying to make something happen so much and so hard that he said, I wound up making some stupid turnovers. I can't do that. I've got to be better with the ball. But the way he played in the second half, I'd expect to see that from Matt Farrell from the jump to the point where how well he played here against Louisville a couple weeks ago. That might be the Matt Farrell for the full 40 minutes. And if Notre Dame can get Matt Farrell back into that sort of a attacking rhythm, I think everybody else falls in line and everybody else looks at it and says, you know what? I think we're going to be okay. So we'll see what happens.
I talked to Eric about this late in the 5 o'clock hour. I want to get your opinion. I felt like from what I saw in the second half in Raleigh, is it time to see Mike Bray shorten the rotation a little bit? And I know it's tough for him to do that because he's been searching for answers, Tom. He's tried every possible combination trying to find more offense. And it feels like he just kept running into dead ends, everything he's tried the last couple of weeks. So as you look at the state of the team, and we're assuming that John Mooney will play tonight, and let's say he plays his normal minutes just for the sake of our argument, is it time for Mike to shorten the bench, allow these maybe seven guys to find a rhythm, find something offensively, and just kind of ride it for a little bit? Because I just think when you go deeper into this rotation now, without a couple of key guys, you're just not getting enough to keep them on the floor.
It's a mess, which is what I wrote about earlier in the week in the South Bend Tribune. And that's one of the questions I asked Mike Bray down in Raleigh at PNC Arena after Saturday's game, where they flowed a little bit better in the second half because I think they played less guys. Elijah Burns was not an option. Nick Jogo was not an option. So when they went with their five core, and Matt or John Mooney was not an option because of his sprained ankle. So they basically played with five guys the entire second half. And when you shorten that rotation, it gets that cohesion and that togetherness and that working as one that's so vital to this program that we've come to know what this program's been about for so many years under Mike Bray, where you've got five main guys all working as one. They know what's going on. They know where the other guy's going to be. And we just have not seen any of that because of such all the injuries and the ineffectiveness and the inconsistency and everything else that's been going on with this basketball team for the last 30 days. If they can get back to that, and that I think that's what Mike Bray really wants to do, to where you just have five guys. Let's maybe make it six. If they stay out of foul trouble, knock on wood, right. if they stay away from injury, let's get those core guys just playing together, and I think you'll see a lot better flow offensively because it's become such a grab bag offensively to where you've got five guys on the floor. They had five guys on the floor at one point on Saturday against North Carolina State. I don't think they've even played with that grouping in pickup during the summertime with Nick Jogo, with Elijah Burns, I think Austin Torres, and then it was either some combination of Farrell, Pfluger, and Gibbs, to where you look at that and you say, man, it's really hard to generate some points. So maybe shortening the rotation, number one. Number two, being back home in your own building where you know the rims, you know where to find your spots to get shots. Maybe that'll finally get this team jump-started, especially on the offensive end.
Tom, right now it's just hard for me to play a lot of minutes. Two guys in particular, and you just mentioned them, Jogo and Burns.
Going.
I think Jogo has potential. I watch him during media sessions. I mean, he cans threes from all over the place. And we saw a game earlier this year where it kind of all came together and he knocked down some shots. But I just think at this point, Tom, you're in such desperate need of offense. I just don't know how many times you can continue to go to him at this point. I'm not saying his career's over. There's going to be more chances down the road. But for what this team needs right now, I mean, you're just not seeing enough offense from him. And Burns really doesn't give you anything offensively. He'll play some defense and grab a few rebounds, but I don't know if it's enough to keep him in the rotation.
Had everything still stayed status quo and Bonzi Colson didn't get hurt, Matt Farrell didn't get hurt, there was not going to be many minutes for Nick Jogo just because that's the way this system is. He sat out last year as a redshirt to kind of grow his game, get kind of used to, okay, this is the way we do things here in this program. The second year in the program is not built under Mike Bray for a guy to go 1 year sitting out as a redshirt, the second year playing 29 minutes against North Carolina or starting at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Nick Jogo may turn out to be a really good player in this program, but he was not ready whatsoever for the role that they asked him and really needed him to assume when Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell went down and then John Mooney had his knee injury. Nick Jogo, it's sort of similar to what happened in 2013-14 when Jaren Grant got tossed for the spring semester because of academics. We had to watch V.J. Beachum, who was a freshman, Demetrius Jackson, who was a freshman, and Steve Astoria, who was a freshman, jump into roles that they just were not ready for. And it became painful at times to watch those guys try to figure it out on the road, try to figure it out at home as far as how do we play? How do I find my shots? How do I make a shot? You know, DJ or Demetrius Jackson at one point at a game at Wake Forest, he started, I think he played 38 minutes in an ACC game, and he took one shot. And you just, you can't win, and Notre Dame didn't win that night down in Wake Forest against the Demon Deacons. You can't win if you have a guy that can, a starter that can take, that only takes one shot. And it's the same thing with Nick Joga. You can't win when your starter is shooting 27% from the field and 25% from three. It just hamstrings you too much, especially with a program that's built on, you know what, there might be nights where we just have to go outscore people. They can't outscore people right now. They have to do it with defense and with rebounding. So maybe Elijah Burns gets a small taste here and there. Maybe Nick Jogo can spell Rex Pfluger for 2 minutes heading into a media timeout somewhere. But right now, those guys are just so limited to what they can do offensively that it hurts to have them on the floor for extended minutes. It's just the way it is.
Tom, it's well documented the struggles of Pfluger during this losing streak, at least shooting the basketball. It's been a tough go for the California kid. Even with the struggles offensively, am I right, Mike Bray cannot afford to take him off the floor? He's got to be a 30-plus minute guy for this team.
Yeah, he has to be because of what he offers defensively. Maybe not what he's been able to do defensively the last 2-3 games, but right. Just the potential. Like tonight, we talked about earlier in the segment, Boston College is going to run three of the better perimeter players that you're going to see in the ACC in Jordan Chapman, Jerome Robinson, and Kai Bowman. You've got to have Rex Pfluger on the floor to take away at least one of those guys defensively, and that's where it hurts Rex Pfluger, where Mike Bray says, all right, again, we go back to the perfect world scenario. If Matt Farrell is 100% healthy and Bonzi Colson's in the lineup, Rex Pfluger is probably option 4 or 5 offensively. But when those guys are either hurting, not 100%, or totally out, in the case of Bonzi Colson, Rex Pfluger jumps up to where he's got to be a second option sometimes. I don't know if he's ready to be a second option because Mike Bray says, all right, Rex, you're going to play 35 minutes. You're going to play 40 minutes. You're going to play 38 minutes. But I need you on the best perimeter guy. And you're going to have to chase him, and you're going to have to expend a heck of a lot of energy on that end of the floor. And then because they're so limited offensively, we're going to need something from you on the other end of the floor. So it's a tough racket right now for Rex Pfluger. But as much as he has struggled to make a shot from the perimeter, from getting to the rim, he's only shooting 36% from the field, 32% from three. As much as he has struggled, he has to be on this floor 30-plus minutes for Notre Dame to have any chance.
Well, the Irish during this 7-game losing streak are shooting 37% from the field, only 31% from the three-point line. I guess all we can hope is the way they played in the second half against NC State, at least shooting-wise, is a good omen. I mean, they hit a lot. What was it, 51% in the second half? I forgot to write that down in my notes. I believe it was 51%. You know, they closed the game well, but boy, the competitive nature of the game was over. And again, it goes back to the fact NC State's a very poor defensive team, so you don't know how to take that particular number. But at this point, Tom, with the way things have gone, they've got to find anything positive and hang their hat on it, because this is such a tough stretch for them, such high expectations. And as you documented with guys like Gebben and Farrell, this is their last go-around. They don't get a second chance with their senior year, so they got to make the most of this. It's got to be trying on them, and I just worry that Farrell's going to put so much pressure on himself to do everything for this team that may not be beneficial for the entire group.
And I can't
blame him for trying to do that either, Tom, because you want to save the day, and I totally get that.
Right, and you want to save your season. Like, this is it for Matt Farrell. Yeah. Matt Farrell, at the beginning of the year, is thinking, all right, I'm going to be a first-team All-ACC guy. We're going to finish in the top three. We may challenge for an ACC regular season championship. we may be ranked in the top 10. We're going to go deep into the NCAA tournament. I mean, look at everything that was lined up for Matt Farrell and for Bonzi Colson and for Austin Torres at the start of the season, and all of that is going to get wiped out. I don't know anybody. If you're a senior and you're a college basketball player, I don't know anybody that would look at that and not be forced to push the panic button. And we're almost there because they keep talking about we can still make a run, we can still get there, we can still do a lot of things, but time is running out. And Mike Bray, we played the clip on Monday's show, Mike Bray saying North Carolina State, they've got a great vibe about them, and we don't. And that comes with having gone 30 days without winning a basketball game and seeing a season that held such promise slip away into something to where if the season ends today, Notre Dame's the 13th place team in a 15-team league.
As we close up shop on this segment, I know you've talked about the BC guards. What do the Irish need to do against BC to get that elusive victory?
They need to maybe, I would say, you know, the easiest thing is to say, well, let's see them get back into an offensive rhythm at home. But I don't know if you can count on that because they have not been in an offensive rhythm really since that first North Carolina State game where they're playing on the emotion of no Bonzi Colson, let's get this win for Mike Bray so he becomes the all-time winningest coach in program history. Oh, Matt Farrell goes down? That's okay. TJ Gibbs and Rex Pfluger can step in and they'll do their thing. And they go for 88 points. And have the most lopsided victory in ACC play, and they made it seem easy. So you could say, yeah, they've got to get back to doing what they do offensively, but you can't count on that because we have not seen them get into an offensive rhythm. I think Mike Bray is going to keep it simple and say Boston College is averaging 74 points per game in league play. They've got three guys that can go off and just light you up on any given night, and tonight might be one of those nights. He's going to tell his guys, let's get back to keeping it simple. Let's defend. Yep. Let's rebound. Notre Dame's been out-rebounded the last two games. In those last two games, they've allowed an average of 82 points and have trailed by 30 in each of those games. That's not what this Notre Dame team has been built. It's not what we've seen from this Notre Dame team. Get back to defending and rebounding. And hopefully, if you're Mike Bray and you got your fingers crossed sitting over on that bench, the offense finally comes around and they can hit some open shots.
That's what it comes down to. The shots have been there recently. It's just getting them to go through the net. The Irish and the Eagles, 8 o'clock tip tonight on WSBT Radio, 7:40 pregame. It sounds like tickets are available if you'd like to hear, or I should say see, the Irish and the Eagles up close tonight at Purcell Pavilion. Coming up in two segments, we'll have a quick installment of Rapid Fire, and I'll tease the first question that we'll answer. Who scores more points for the Irish the rest of the season, Matt Farrell or TJ Gibbs?
You big tease.
Coming up. Oh, but next, little state of the ACC. Where are we right now? Is the ACC underachieving right now? Is Virginia the real deal? We'll talk about the conference next. Sports Beat coming your way from Purcell Pavilion in the Cave tonight on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Abby, thank you very much. Sports Beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett at Mishawaka High School. Caveman basketball versus New Prairie. Live on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, probably right around 7:30. Tom Noy filling in for Sean Stiers tonight on the 6 o'clock hour of Sports Beat. He is stationed at Purcell Pavilion, getting set to cover Notre Dame and Boston College for the South Bend Tribune. And in the Insider.com, the Eagles and the Irish play at 8 o'clock here on 96.1 FM WSBT. So, Tom, let's talk about the Atlantic Coast Conference for a moment. It's been kind of an interesting year for the ACC. We figured there'd be a couple of high-end teams in the ACC and then a lot of competitive balance in the middle. I think the competitive balance has unfolded the way we expected. Now, come tournament time, things can change, obviously, with some of these blue bloods that always seem to find their way into big-time spots in the NCAA tournament. But I don't know how to judge overrated, underrated, because everybody has a different feel for the conference. So let's just go with what you thought about the conference coming into the year And with the way Duke has slipped up a couple of times, losing at Boston College, they lost to St. John's in the Garden, a team that had lost 11 consecutive games. North Carolina has been very mediocre to their standards. So when you look at this conference, in your eyes, is this league right now underachieving?
Yes. It doesn't. There's just something missing this season. And, I mean, you can start by the fact that, look, Notre Dame was picked to finish third. They're in 13th place. You knew Pittsburgh was going to be at the bottom. They're going to go, they're 0-11. They may go 0-18. But there's just not, there's not a lot of juice in the league where nobody expected this from Virginia. You know, they weren't even picked in the top 25 preseason because they said, they lost a bunch of guys. A couple other guys transferred. This is going to be a long season in Charlottesville. Virginia is going to win the league before the middle of the month is almost out. I mean, that's the way they're just crushing people. So you expected a lot of teams to be better. When Clemson, all right, nothing against Clemson. So you Clemson fans out there, if you're going to argue it, send your email to Darren Pritchett. But when Clemson's the number two team in the ACC as we sit here on February 6th, Clemson's 8-3. It's a weird year, and it's not one of those years where you look at it and say, man, the ACC is just a crusher league.
Well, Duke has all the talent in the world. They have no excuses. I mean, they're fully loaded. They got arguably the best big guy in the country. But for whatever reason, their coaching staff either is not emphasizing defense or the players aren't listening, because they normally don't get overly interested on the defensive end until the final 5 minutes of the game, and sometimes it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get the job done. I mean, offensively, they're extremely talented, but even the shorthanded Notre Dame basketball team for, what, about 28 minutes at Cameron, they did not look a whole lot different than Duke from an execution standpoint, and that shouldn't have been the case with all the McDonald's All-Americans and first-round picks that Duke has. Now, at the end of the day, they pulled away and won easily, but they just appear to be a team that probably looks better on paper than they're actually going to be in the NCAA tournament. This just feels like a year they're going to get upset early in the tournament, and that shouldn't be the case, especially when you can throw Bagley out there. And how many teams have an answer for Bagley in the country?
Hey, Notre Dame had an answer for him. He did not play very well. I know John Mooney fouled out, but John Mooney made him work just over a week ago back down at Cameron Indoor Stadium. So, Duke, if you're looking at Duke and saying that's a Final Four team or that's a team that's going to win a national championship, just beware that if they run into a team, it doesn't matter what conference they're from, if they run into a team that's veteran and experienced and older and has been there, this is going to be a Duke team that's going to have all the pressure on them, because everybody's saying, look, they've got four, maybe five first-round NBA draft picks on that roster. They have to get to the Final Four. They should get to the Final Four. And that pressure, these are guys in Bagley and Wendell Carter and Gary Trent and Trayvon Duval that have never been through the NCAA tournament. And it's a different kind of pressure. It's a different kind of animal. And you can't afford to just say, you know what, we're going to turn it on, we're going to turn it off. And we've seen that too much from this Duke team this year. It happened back in December at Boston College. When they opened up, they were the number one team in the league. And by the end of the night at Conte Forum, they were in last place in the ACC because Boston College got them. I think Boston College went for over 90 that game. So Duke has a tendency to say, you know what, we're good, we know we're good, and we're just going to decide whether or not we want to give our A effort. Their A effort was not good enough the other day against St. John's at Madison Square Garden. Everybody was saying, look, Duke, oh, they lose. That was St. John's, basically, that was their Final Four game. St. John's stinks in the Big East. They had to get up for one game. That was their biggest game of the year. They got up for it. They got it. Everybody's going to be looking at Duke and saying, can they get to the Final Four? I don't know, because they don't defend, and they're so young to where I thought Grayson Allen would have been better as far as being a senior leader. I think he's taken more of a back seat, maybe because of everything that's happened to him during his career. But he's taken more of a back seat to guys like Trent and Carter and Bagley as we move deeper into February.
Tom Noy, Darren Pritchett, SportsBeat, talking about the state of the ACC. Virginia right now in control of their destiny to win the regular season crown. Tom, they're 11-0. They're ranked number two in the human polls behind Villanova, right ahead of Purdue.
I remember years ago in the Big East, Pittsburgh had some really good teams but never were able to really get over the hump in the NCAA tournament. I mean, they had a couple of nice runs, but probably didn't go as far as they could have a couple of times. Virginia is a team, their formula for success with the pack line defense has allowed them to win a lot of regular season games. They have not won the ACC tournament title, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And in the NCAA tournament, they have not been able to get over the hump to get to a Final Four. So with the way Virginia plays and with the talent they have this year, are you confident that they can maybe put some of that behind them this year? Are the elements there to possibly make that big run this season?
Maybe. But I'm still not sold that Virginia can get to the Final Four, because the deeper they go into the NCAA tournament, the question is always going to be there. The pressure is, you know, is this the year that Virginia can finally get to a Final Four under Tony Bennett? They've been close. Everybody expected them to get there a couple years ago when Notre Dame was playing North Carolina in the East Regional. And before that game, Syracuse upsets Virginia in the Elite Eight at right. United Center in Chicago to get to the Final Four. So I don't know. I mean, it's a different. Maybe this is the Virginia team that can get there. What Mike Bray always likes to say: when you've got good guards, you've got a chance. And Virginia has two really good guards in Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome. And maybe this is the year that those two guys and everybody else on that Virginia team figures it out and gets to a Final Four. But until they do, you know, it's always going to be – Virginia is almost like Gonzaga now. Yeah, everybody talked about Gonzaga. They won a lot of games every year in their conference. They won their conference every year. They're a high seed in the NCAA tournament, but they never got to a Final Four. They were able to do that this year. Maybe this is the year that Tony Bennett gets that team to San Antonio.
North Carolina, defending national champions, a record of 6-5. Not the same team that we have witnessed play in the championship game each of the last 2 years. I know they've had to have some discipline done to one of their young players. It wasn't by Roy Williams. It was by the university. What a shock that is. But Carolina's 6-5 right now, Tom. Are you ready to sell the Tar Heels as a team that can make some noise in March?
What did I say on last night's show about North Carolina?
A lot of people didn't hear that, so I got to bring it back up again.
I'm picking Notre Dame to possibly upset North Carolina down in Chapel Hill a week from yesterday, because of what North Carolina's got coming this week. They play Duke on Thursday. They play North Carolina State on Saturday. Two huge triangle games. I mean, those games don't get any bigger, even though they're regular season. They get so big, they're on two networks, ESPN and then Raycom, the local college basketball affiliate down there in the triangle. So, but North Carolina, it's a different North Carolina team, like you said. Before, what was North Carolina known for? They were going to play big. They were going to play transit. They were getting their secondary break. They run their transition stuff and score a lot of points. They don't play big this year. They play with one big guy, and I think it's a change for Roy Williams. They've lost games that they should have won. They really should have lost the game they played here last month against Notre Dame. If T.J. Gibbs' bucket doesn't roll halfway in and down and out at the buzzer. So it's a different makeup of a North Carolina team. There's not, like I said, there's at the beginning of the segment, there's not a lot of juice in this conference. I don't see that from North Carolina being the defending national champion. They're just kind of there right now.
Finally, Tom, as we wrap up our conversation on the ACC for tonight, a couple of teams, middle of the pack, Virginia Tech, who beat the Irish recently, Syracuse. That was a wild game, 51-49, the last time Notre Dame won in ACC play, that late rally to steal one from the Orange. Are either one of those teams going to make it into the NCAA tournament?
You know what? Syracuse might have helped themselves last night when they got a road win at Louisville. Mm-hmm. And now everybody's talking about, hey, Louisville might be on the verge of really being in trouble to get back to the
impressed.
NCAA tournament. Yeah, we're 2 weeks ago, they were maybe the second or third best team in the conference behind mm-hmm. Virginia with what they were able to do early with David Pageant. So it's Virginia Tech, Syracuse, those are two teams that are just kind of they're still muddled and stuck in the middle of the pack there in the ACC. Can they do enough to maybe get up and get to maybe fifth or sixth in the ACC by the end of the year? If that happens, Maybe they are NCAA tournament teams.
All right, that's some talk on the ACC, Notre Dame and BC tonight at 8 on WSBT Radio. Rapid Fire is next. It is 13 in front of the top of the hour, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Thanks, Abby. Sports Beats. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour, so we'll get to a few rapid-fire questions. Tom Noy at Notre Dame. I'm Darren Pritchett at Mishawaka High School. And the first question, Tom, is this in rapid-fire today. Who scores more points for the Irish the rest of the season, Matt Farrell or T.J. Gibbs?
I'm going with Matt Farrell. They're both averaging 15.7 right now. Through Matt Farrell through 18 games, T.J. Gibbs through 23. And like we talked about earlier in the show, I think Matt Farrell eventually is going to see, all right, I've only got 7, 8, 9 games left in my college career. I'm going to go out attacking, aggressive, and just leave it all out there. T.J. Gibbs became one of the main scorers when Matt Farrell was out of the lineup. I think he's okay with being maybe a secondary guy as far as scoring and playmaking if Matt Farrell's around, because T.J. Gibbs knows I still have 2 more years left, but with Matt Farrell, this is it. So I think Farrell, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to have a solid run here to end his college career.
And I think that's great analysis. I can't disagree with anything you said. I think it will be Farrell because he is the guy that's going to try to lead this team back into the win column and pick up as many wins as possible coming down the stretch. And I think there is a time where T.J. Gibbs is going to be the guy, and it might be sooner rather than later. But I think Matt Farrell is the guy that this team's going to try to ride and do whatever they can to get the ball in his hands. Shot the ball well in the second half against NC State, so hopefully that's a sign of what's to come. So I'm going to go with Farrell as well.
All right.
And I think Matt's going to be a guy maybe 16, 17 points a game the rest of the way.
There you go.
I was going to ask you who would score more points the rest of the way, Bonzi Colson or the combination of Torres and Burns?
We can't do that.
Well, but because you don't know if Colson's coming back.
Right.
That's kind of the fun part of that question. You don't have to answer. We'll go to the next one. What Notre Dame basketball 18-19 newcomer will have the biggest impact on the team? And it can be a transfer. It doesn't have to be a freshman.
Well, when you say it can be a transfer, you're maybe leading me down the road to say Juwan Durham. But I won't. I will say the guy that's going to have the biggest impact on this team next year will be a shooting guard from Mars, Pennsylvania, by the name of Robbie Carmody. He gives this team what they don't have, a guy that can consistently make perimeter shots, maybe from deep, maybe from mid-range. He's a scorer in high school. I think there was one game recently that Robbie Carmody went for 48 points. So getting Robbie Carmody here, he was one of their behind Prentice Hub. And normally I would say Prentice Hub because Matt Farrell's leaving, so they need another point guard to come in and play as a freshman. But Prentice Hub wrecked his knee and had season-ending knee surgery, did not play at all, is not going to play at all as a high school senior. So it's going to be hard for him to come in and hit the ground running, pick up where he should have left off in high school. So normally I'd say Prentice Hub, but I'm going to say Robbie Carmody because I think he's going to be really good for this program.
All right, I like that. Now, it's funny, on the script, I didn't finish writing this question, so you're probably wondering, where am I going with this?
Yeah.
It was one of those days today. Former Notre Dame guard Pat Connaughton with Portland is averaging 6.5 points per game. He's averaging a career-high 20 minutes per game. With that being said, it appears he's found some footing in the NBA. So my question is, does this mean that Pat Connaughton will never pitch in professional baseball again?
If you ask Pat Connaughton that question, his response would be never say never. He'll always keep that option open. What is the market going to hold for Pat Connaughton in the summertime? The Blazers, he's not under contract at all, so he may either be a restricted free agent, or he'll be an unrestricted free agent to where he can go anywhere he wants. Who is going to throw big time dollars at Pat Connaughton? There's going to be some team. It may not be Portland. Portland's way over the luxury tax for next season. They've got a lot of bad contracts that they can't get rid of. They may not be able to afford Pat Connaughton just because they've got so many bad contracts tied up with guys like Evan Turner, to where somebody says, hey, I'm looking at Pat Connaughton and I'm going to give him maybe a mid-level exception 3 years, $21 million or something. And if that's the case, then baseball gets put on hold for another 3 years. What if they look at the market, or Pat Connaughton looks at the market and doesn't get a good asking, doesn't find a team that fits his style? Maybe then he says, I'm going to give baseball a shot. So knowing Pat, he's going to stay basketball all the way. But if there's any slight doubt, or if a team other than Portland says, we're going to throw max dollars at you, by the way, you can still dabble in baseball, Pat Connaughton would be at spring training in about 10 seconds.
I will give the short answer. He's going to pitch in professional baseball at some point. He's too good not to.
That was my short answer.
Not to. I can't wait for the podcast for the real answer. We got to get to break. We'll wrap up Sports Beat next on WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Once again, Irish basketball against BC. Pre-game at 7:40. Opening tip at 8. Z94.3 FM has Mishawaka Cabin basketball against New Prairie at 7:30. Tom, thank you. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You got it, my man.
Tom will have a recap at IndyInsider.com later tonight. Top of the hour, Dub South Bend.